Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here and joining us again on another hopefully fun-filled episode. We got a great guest again in store for you all as we go into, I don't even know what episode number this is. Man, I should have probably looked that up. But if you want to find past episodes, they're all there for you at Spotify and other places you find podcasts. Pretty much anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find all the past shows, including our Hot Off the Press shows that we do smaller segments, a little more of the what's happening now with the FSHD Society. A couple episodes back of that version, we had Beth Johnston on it. She was talking about the walk and roll. And we do things like that with those episodes. But these episodes I kind of call our featured guest type episodes. We really kind of get into the FSHD community. So we're excited to kind of bring you the next guest coming up. First, though, we want to thank our sponsors, and that is Perkin Elmer and Fulcrum. They've been with the show now for a while and helping us out broadcast this every month, this episode, as well as all the past ones. We thank them very much for all their support, as well as we thank Optum for the walk and roll support that they've given us as well. Those great sponsors kind of help fuel the fire and take, you know, some of the costs and elements out of this, and they take it on, and we're very grateful for them, as well as all the research and things they do in our community beyond this show. But back to this episode, we're going to be talking with Renee Beaker. She has been on the show before, and we did Giving Tuesday, I think it's 2021 in December. So we welcome her back again. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks for coming on, because there's a lot of things that I wanted to touch on. And, you know, when it comes to life adjustments, professional life with FSHD, you know, a lot of questions to me based on, you know, when is it time to retire, or, you know, even power equipment, when, you know, is that more defeat, or is that something we should need, and how should we wrap our minds around that? I think you have great perspective on those points, but so many other things that we can kind of touch on as we walk through this conversation. First off, though, I would like you to take a little opportunity for those that did not maybe see the last time you were on. Tell us a little about yourself, maybe your FSHD story.
Okay. I'll give my age. I'm 63. I was diagnosed when I was 22. So I'm an old lady, and I feel like an old lady, but my spirit is young. My spirit is young.
That's cool.
So I first noticed that I couldn't comb my hair when I was 12. When I first started playing the clarinet, it didn't sit in my mouth evenly. I was 8. And then I noticed that my shoulders were sloping at 16. So my parents took me to an orthopedic specialist who said I had scoliosis, which is not uncommon if you look back with other people with the disease. He gave me exercises to do. Of course, it didn't cure me or do anything. So the sloping of the shoulders became winging of the scapula. And I went to, in Biloxi, Mississippi, I went to Keesler Air Force Base, and they diagnosed me with FSHD, but they said, wait, let's do a muscle biopsy first before we actually give it. Well, if you don't get the right muscle on the right spot, you get the wrong diagnosis, which is what happened. They told me that I had polymyositis, not muscular dystrophy. Oh. So my husband and I decided we were going to have our first child because I didn't have muscular dystrophy. Well, when I was 26, we still further investigated the symptoms I was having at Johns Hopkins, and lo and behold, I did have FSHD.
Oh, man.
So, and that was back in the day where you had multiple EMGs, and which are not pleasant, not nice at all. We wanted to figure out where the disease came from, and bless my parents, they went to the University of New Mexico to their MBA clinic, and they both had EMGs. And it was my mom who was the carrier. And when you think back, she had cousins who were diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. At the time, they were told it was limb girdle, not FSHD. But if you look at the symptoms, they're very, 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 very similar. So it's, unfortunately, it's in my family lineage. I'm one of four kids, and statistically, two of us have it and two of us don't have it. My younger brother didn't really show symptoms, strong symptoms, until 10, 15 years ago. And he was just diagnosed officially last year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And throughout that process, because, yeah, you got a misdiagnosis. So then you were thinking then with your husband planning a family. So what happened, though, if it wasn't diagnosed as the other thing? You know, if let's say they said, no, it is FSHD. That was the original diagnosis, and that's what it was. And obviously, that's what it is. Would that have changed anything with the point of your lives where you were with your husband with a family decision?
Well, when we decided to have our second child, you know, do we have another child? Because I didn't want to have an only child. So lots of thought. I had gone through genetic testing at Keesler Air Force Base. But remember, this is 1982. So it's all diagrams with a geneticist. There's no computer. There's no genetics involved necessarily. So it was extensive genetic counseling. But when I did research, when I actually looked at the disease and the literature that was available in 1985, 86, they were still saying that I wouldn't have a problem below my waist, and that the your legs will never be affected, your hips will never be affected. You're going to live a normal lifespan. You're going to live a normal life. That's what all of the literature said. So we decided to go ahead and have another child. So I have two kids, and unfortunately, I've given it to both of them, which is heartbreaking as a mother. Bless them both. They're both very active. I mean, they're terrific adults. My daughter is also a nurse. She's a nurse practitioner for women's health. She has two kids. One of them is adopted, and one of them is biologic. And she's a great parent. She has a wonderful husband. My son is my caretaker. He is my full-time caretaker. He's also affected, as I said, but he takes excellent care of me, and I am truly blessed.
How did you kind of mention that, you know, that you passed it on to your kids? And I'm assuming that came with a whole host of different feelings, right?
Emotions. Yes. It was when I saw it in Alethea long before she was diagnosed, because I was on the lookout for it. She never really slept with her eyes closed. She always had trouble whistling. She was very athletic until she was about 12 or 13. And then I could see that running and using her legs and using her arms at the same time she was running was becoming more challenging for her. It's gut-wrenching. It's just gut-wrenching as a parent. I mean, I always knew that it was autosomal dominant, and I always knew that it was a 50-50 chance. But with Alethea, although I didn't know that I had it at the time, I really thought, and with Gavin, it'll never go below my waist. I might have trouble reaching things. I might have trouble using my arms. I was never able to whistle, but I could play instruments. I played the flute and the clarinet and the alto sax. Did very well with that. So once again, when you look at the literature that was back and available in the 80s, it never really painted an acute picture of what the disease really can and does do.
Yeah, it's it is tough, true, because based on your, you know, the whole timing and where technology was and so forth, it's more advanced now, of course, and it does help, and the genetic testing is great. And I'm glad you kind of mentioned that. I mean, even though it wasn't genetic testing, but it was genetic counseling, did you find value in it regardless, even though you said it was 1982 and you're going through that?
Sure. It was valuable in the fact that they drew a pedigree. I mean, I knew as much knowledge as I had of both my parents' lineage. It was helpful to see it all written down in a pedigree chart. That was helpful. And they were very kind and gracious, but they didn't paint the disease as devastating as it actually is.
And I don't think it was a matter of misinformation. It was just the information that they had.
Right. And absolutely.
But I do feel that still, when I've had conversations with those that, you know, share their diagnosis story, either on the show or in events I've been to, and you're kind of sharing, you know, what their take is on their diagnosis and what the doctors have told them and this and that. You know, it's like that always, it kind of bothers me that it's almost downplayed to some degree, or actually quite a bit, in my opinion, of what it can do. I don't know if they're doing that to not worry people, or is that really what they believe? But I mean, I've seen it in people be pretty devastating. And to say, you know, I was told it's not life threatening, it's life shortening. Yeah. So have you ever heard it phrased like that with people maybe sharing their diagnosis story with you?
Now in today's world, within the past 10 to 20 years, yes. But yeah. Before I was told it's not life shortening and it's not really life threatening.
Yeah.
But because it was such a rare disease at that time in the 80s, it was considered 1 in 200,000. Not the 1 in 80,000 now, which may even be not as rare as we think, because as you very well know, the variation in the expression of the disease is so varied that it's really difficult. And there are so many providers, physicians out there that just they may be looking at an FSHD patient and not even have a clue that that's actually what they have.
Yes, I agree with that as well.
It's rare. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's rare. So.
So when you were having a family, and what kind of career point were you at there in your professional life?
So I always wanted to be a nurse ever since I was little. So I finished an associate degree program in 82 and worked in an OBGYN unit at a hospital. I pretty much always worked in a hospital except for one short stint in a dock in the box, which is like an urgent care center. And nursing is great. Nursing is great for having a family. I, you know, worked the evening shift or the night shift. I worked in OBGYN unit. I worked on an oncology unit, a med-surg unit, an orthopedic unit. I worked in same-day surgery. I worked in the GI lab where we did colonoscopies and EGDs. I worked in a pre-admission testing center. I set that up, did that for years. That was a lot of fun. And then I worked as a wellness nurse for a home health agency. And then I worked as an educator and an administrator. And then I worked as a case manager, a nurse case manager. And then I worked in the quality office, did a lot of quality and administration. And then I went back to case management. And then I went back to quality. And then I ended up my career as the MAGNET program coordinator and professional practice coordinator. You know, I loved every one of my jobs. There was always something really very special about each one of my roles, and helping people and promoting quality and safe patient care has always been really important to me. I loved my whole career. I was really very, very blessed to have such a good career. I worked at some great institutions. I worked at Brigham and Women's, and I worked at Dartmouth Medical Center. Oh, wow. And I worked for Dartmouth Medical Center Clinic. And then when I moved here, I worked for Common Spirit. So lots of great opportunities to do great things.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a very rich career. There's a lot of people that would say, well, there was parts that were that way, but there was also parts that might have been a nightmare. So sounds very fortunate, the path you had.
There were many nightmares. Believe me, there were many, many nightmares. But I think if you ask any nurse or any other healthcare provider, they're going to tell you that there's nightmares. But you don't go into it because of the nightmares. You go into it for the things that you can do. And even with the nightmares, there's almost always something positive that happened in that nightmare. And that's what allows you to go to sleep at night and then get up the next day and go back to work.
Right. I mean, to have that kind of optimism that despite the storms and whatnot, it's you get up and you go forward again. Right. I would kind of define that as courage in a way. I think people don't use that word quite often enough. I think they try to designate it just for the extreme situations, but sometimes, you know, making the conscious decision to do something, even though you know you don't want to do it, but you do it anyway, and usually, and especially if it's for a greater good or cause, that's courage, you know, because you could make the decision, say, nope, not doing it, going back to bed. This is not going to happen, you know, but, you know, I think people decide every day and say, I'm going to do this. And of course, if you can also decide to do it well, that's also a great positive piece. If you can add it, that's also difficult. Speak about that maybe, Renee, is the optimistic side. I mean, you were always that way?
I think probably. My dad is extremely optimistic. He's the kind that wakes up with a smile on his face. And before he's out of bed, it's like, good morning.
Wow. That'd be annoying. Yes. I would be like, Dad, give me a break. Yeah, yeah.
And we did. We did. Yeah. Bless him. We did. We did give him. So I do think I get that from my dad. He's very optimistic. And, you know, I want to be happy. Mm. And even though bad things happen, I like to see the positive potential in pretty much everything. I know that not everything has a positive potential, but I do like to see that. You know, with nursing and the challenge of FSHD, with an associate degree, you really can't go do a whole lot. And I knew that my muscle strength, but this time it was 90s, in the 90s, 95. And I worked with a great orthopedic surgeon who said, you're going to need to get a bachelor's degree because you need to continue to work and you're not going to be able to do it at the bedside. So I went back to school and got my bachelor's degree, working full time with two kids. Oh. And then I was able to do a desk job more or less. And that was very, very helpful. So I still felt like I had my foot in the nursing door and I was still helping people and communities, but I was doing it in a different way. And then when my kids got into high school, I realized that I wanted to do more. So then I went back to school and got my master's degree, working full-time as a single mom. But you know what? You do it. You put your feet down and get up every day and I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it. I called it the chaos theory. You know, okay. You're not really sure how you're going to do it, but you just go ahead and put it out there and you figure it out as you go along. So that's
hard. I mean, the fact that, yeah, that you started with associates and ended now with a master's, that is remarkable. With all the life changes and FSCHD kind of being always lingering, right, in the shadows of stuff. Was that, though, really the motivation? Was, you know, based on what that person told you of, yeah, you should probably get your bachelor's, and just were you always seemed to be questing then to make sure you stayed a steps ahead of FSHD before it made, you know, decisions difficult for you?
That was a big part of it, but it's also just my drive for my career. You know, I wanted to be able to do as much as I could to help as many people as I could. When I got more into administration, it was more of a community that I was working with. Quite often it was the nursing community. I worked with the nurses in the hospital. I was an educator. And when you're doing quality and projects, you're working with the community, whether it be the nurses or the physicians or whomever. But I always had that drive to do something more. Boy, that looks like a fun job. I bet I could do that. How can I figure out how to get to do that? Well, you might need a bachelor's degree to do that. Okay, so then you get a bachelor's degree, and oh, I would think I might want to do that. So then I might need a master's degree to be able to do that. So,
wow. And how long did it take you to get the bachelor's, do you recall, or the master's as well?
So I started actually when I went to school to be a nurse back in 1976. I'm aging myself. I started with a bachelor's degree. I actually got my bachelor's degree in 1996. I graduated. So that took me 20 years. And then it took me 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think that might be a record.
That's persistent. Yeah.
Yeah. But wow. I did it. I was only able to pay for one class at a time. So that's what I did. And when I got my master's degree, it was the same way. I could have taken a loan out, but I really didn't want to strap myself with the potential for not being able to continue to work. I didn't want to strap myself with a loan that I might not be able to pay for. So I did it one course, actually a couple quarters, I took two classes, but I paid for it as I went along. It took me 5 years to do that.
Wow. All the while raising the kids, holding down the job.
Right. With my master's degree, the kids were... Gavin was still in high school, but Elise was in college, and then they were in college by the time I finished.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. Because that would have been probably a little bit crazier life if you're trying to do that. Yeah, when they were even in early high school age, would have been tough. I mean, that's there's a lot going on in their lives, and then you're trying to keep up with that too, as well as manage the time for homework and all the requirements and whatnot for the classes. Now, was that all in person classes too? Not like it is now, or was there a little bit of a hybrid element then?
Actually, for my bachelor's degree, it was an actual class. They videotaped it and they sent me the tapes and I watched them at home on my VCR.
Okay.
Wow. So it was a hybrid arrangement, but it really was the same thing.
Yeah.
But for my master's degree, I got it at Drexel. So if I were in Philadelphia and I could go to the classes, it was the same arrangement, but I didn't. I did it all online.
Wow.
Yeah.
So for those that don't know what a VCR is. And when you said that, I was like, oh, I know what that is. And I'm thinking, there's probably could be some people that don't know what that is. No, that's great. But the drive, the ambition, and to kind of roll with it, but also personally, you brought up the fact that you wanted to seem like always help people. Is that what drew you then to that profession?
It absolutely did. When I was a kid, when I was 4, I had to have surgery. And there were 2 nurses that took care of me. One was very sweet and kind, and one was nasty and mean. And so I vowed to myself that I wanted to be a nurse, and I always wanted to be that kind nurse,
Yeah. I think that's what everybody wants, right? I know when, like, my parents have come back from the hospital, or if I've had, you know, anybody, I guess, for that matter. But usually lately it's been my parents, and they always seem to say that, like, right away. I'm like, well, okay, you're home now, or how did the night go? Or, you know, if they had to stay overnight. It was good. But, you know, and they always go through the nurses. He was this way, she was that way, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, you know, it's almost like the same thing you get, like when you go to a wedding. It's never, oh, the couple was great. It's always about the food or how was the cake and all that stuff. So you go to the hospital, and you come back to it. Well, the nurse, you know, they were this way, mean, nice, you know, So good for you for trying to set the tone of being the nice nurse.
That was my goal.
So with FSHD, you know, when did you start getting more, involved with volunteering your time with FSHD Society or getting involved with the community that way? When did that start to kind of come into play into your life more and more?
So when the FSHD Society first came about, I was kind of involved, but it was just too much. It was just too much. So I had to back away. Carol Perez asked me to run a support group in the Pennsylvania area. This is probably the mid-90s, later 90s. So I did that, I think, for 2 years. And then my ex-husband and I moved to New Hampshire. And so that didn't happen. And then I was asked to run a support group for MDA and FSHD in the early 2000s. That was right when I got divorced. So, of course, that didn't happen either. So once I stopped working, then I was really able to focus a lot of time with the FSHD Society.
Okay. So retiring kind of set the tone with some open time and still in the same line. It still kind of fed your passion about helping people.
You know, you're exactly right. It feeds me. I really want to continue to help people. So the Women on Wellness has been a great opportunity to work with women who are just fabulous. I mean, they're just absolutely wonderful. The group of women that we have, and for anybody out there that's listening, the 2 requirements to be a participant in the Women Within Wellness is that you need to be a woman and you need to have FSHD. We would love to have you join with us. We're constantly recruiting new people. Our meetings are not taped or recorded because of confidentiality. We want women to feel very open to share and not have to worry about being seen by somebody else that they might not want that to happen. Mm-hmm. We have a very strict confidentiality code. We have great discussions. We've had great topics. You mentioned wondering when to note about transitioning from one assistive device to another. We had 2 great sessions not too long ago about that. We identified that we really do need to build a team. Mm-hmm. And everybody's team's going to look different, but common people on the team would be a physician, maybe a physical therapist, occupational therapist, good friends, family members, people that support you. And knowing that you're not losing something by switching to an assistive device, you're gaining more independence and safety and quality of life. Very, very important. And it was great discussion. Great discussion. We also talked about some life hacks, what's been very helpful to people in the group. I'm trying to think what else. We're going to have somebody this time work with us with chair yoga. We're going to have a physical therapist come and talk with us about incontinence, which is may not seem that wonderful, but if you're a woman or a man with this disease and that's a problem for you, it's a big deal. So I'm very thankful that she's going to come and do that. And then most of our meetings are driven by topics that people want to hear within the group. So we vote on what the next topic will be.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great. Man.
Oh, yeah. It needs to be led by the people in the group.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Huh. That's great. I love that. You get that buy-in, you get that involvement. You're right. Then it's not just one person setting the tone, but just the topics already that you seem to cover. It's just incredible, you know? And I love that the fact that those are the only two requirements. That's great. You know? And the confidentiality I think is key as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's gotta be very, very important to those that are involved. What is the process though, then to be involved in the group or to get in there? Cause it comes across, okay, there's a little bit of exclusiveness to it, but so then how do you get invited in? Does someone that wants to be a member of that group have to email someone, or how does that work?
Excellent question. So if you go to the FSHD Society webpage, mm-hmm. and if you go to the calendar, mm-hmm. and the meeting is always on the first Wednesday of the month. If you click on the, it's called WOW, Women on Wellness, little icon on the calendar, it takes you to a registration button, and you just register for it. And then it's automatic. June Kinoshita does it. It's automatic that everybody that's registered gets a reminder. And I think it's a day or two before the meeting.
Okay.
And then if you have trouble getting in, people are always emailing me. Actually, when the meeting is going on, I keep my email open so that I can get people into the meeting if they, for whatever reason, that the Zoom link isn't working or they didn't get it or whatever. We want people to participate. The group of women are extremely dynamic and innovative, and they're fun. And they really enjoy the community that has been built by meeting, being able to meet.
And how about like the age range, you know, for those that might be curious about that?
Yeah, there's no limitation on age. No limitation on age. You know, for a younger person, for a teenager, some of the topics may not be something that are of interest to them. Right. But I don't think that anything we talk about is, but we want, you know, if you want to try and join, please do.
Yeah.
If you meet those two criteria.
Right. And as you were giving the instructions, folks, I mean, I was clicking along, and it is easy. It's that easy to find the calendar. It is the first Wednesday of every month and so forth. And yeah, it's very simple. So I do implore people, women, to do that, to be a part of it. Yeah. You're right. There's chair yoga on September 7th. This might be airing after that fact. So hopefully that meeting goes really well and insightful, but there's always one coming. You mentioned first one and new topics. Let's say though, that somebody, you said that they're not recorded. So if they do miss a meeting, then you just missed it. I mean, I assume that that's probably the unfortunate downfall of the confidentiality side of it.
It could be. I take notes. I don't take minutes. I take notes. And the notes are depersonalized, so no one's name is mentioned. If somebody says something, I might say, one member said,
sure.
or a member noted, and then I try not to do anything that's a quote.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you the gist of the meeting. I know that June gets those notes, and I know that she shares them because I hear from people, which is good, which is why I keep the notes. So that if somebody has an interest in whatever that topic is, maybe there's something in there. I also try, if somebody talks about a product, I try and pull that product web browser address and put that into the notes so that it's easier to find that information. And trying to make it one-stop shopping for people with the notes. And for me too, if I forget, because I'm an old lady and I do that.
You keep saying you're this old lady. No, you're not, Renee. Come on. Come on. You got a lot of fuel there. Come on. You got a lot of energy.
Thank you. That don't
do all these things that you do and continue to follow the passion of helping people the way you have so far. I love too the fact that the abbreviation is WOW, Women of Wellness. I mean, I know that's what makes sense, but it's kind of cool. It's easy to remember. So I love that as well.
It's Women on Wellness.
Well, it's on Wellness. Is that what it says? Oh, yes. Yeah. Women on Wellness. There it is.
I'm going to plug our team for the walk and roll. Yes. We are the Women on Wellness Warriors. We've met our goal of $1,000 to be raised for the society. I can't speak highly enough about the society. When they came up with a wellness group because of the pandemic and the lack of socialization, there were a couple of women that wanted to talk about topics that were a little bit more sensitive that they didn't want to have a mixed group with. So June, within days, had the women's group ready to go.
Wow.
And we have met so many wonderful people through it. I think many people have had needs met. It's probably prejudicial on my part. But from the conversation and the community that's been built, the society has really supported all of that.
So, yeah, that is a huge value, right? To be a part of the society.
Absolutely.
And then we have these branches of, the women's group that you're talking about, as well as I think Gen Z has a group for younger people, early onset for even younger yet. They're really starting to leave no stone.
And the parent support group.
Oh, yes. And the parent support group. Yes. I think there's the caregiver, sharegiver.
There is.
As well. Yeah. So, yeah. The only thing I see is that I don't see a men's group yet. So I have thought about.
It has been talked about. It has been talked about. So I think all that June needs, God bless her, is to demonstrate that need or that desire.
Yeah. Someone just has to take that one. Yeah. I've thought about it, but I don't know if I'm that guy. I have this going on.
And what you do is very beneficial. Very, very beneficial.
And just like what you're talking about, like with the society and the support, I mean, this could not be done without that support. I mean, the back end work from, Lee and June and countless other people, within the FSHD society, the staff, there's a lot of moving parts with guests and all the advertising and the posts and, putting it on certain places. It runs so much better than when I basically was doing it kind of ish by myself. And then I would like, I didn't post the episode or I'd miss something. I'd be like, and then Lee came in and kind of helped save the day along with others. And I'm like, good. And it seems like it's moving. So yeah, they always give support. So if anybody has that idea in their head that they think something is a need, you're definitely going to get the support from the FSHD Society to help you run with it,
Absolutely.
Yeah. When it comes to, you made the transition from, working to retirement and then volunteering and still feeding your passion. And those that are, maybe a little bit behind of that cusp, maybe, I know you mentioned, you said it earlier, I'm just saying, you said you were 63. So those that maybe are in their like 50s or even my age, like I'm 47, since we're all throwing our age out there, I'll throw mine out there. I believe I'm a little ways off, but since this disease is so differently affecting all of us, right, differently, I think the timing then is different of when do you transition? How do you know, if you have a physical job, when are you kind of making that choice to make a shift? How do you do that? So I guess share a little bit of your insight, when the timing is right or when you believe it is, or what should be in people's minds, if this thought is entering their mind of how did they clear a path for that transition? What should they be doing?
I think it's really important to be open-minded and to really take all aspects into consideration. Mm-hmm. And also it depends on what you do for a living too.
Yeah.
Many organizations are really good about making accommodations. I know the hospital that I worked for put a button on the door. Actually, they gave me a key fob so that I could open up the door to get into the office.
Really?
Now,
oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And in all fairness, I fell flat on my face in front of the door and they made me lay there for 40 minutes until they could get a
seat
with a backboard and a seat collar before they let me up. But after that fall, which I only had a concussion, no broken bones, they did put the key fob and they opened up the door for me. Made it so that I could work from home as much as I could. They made it very easy to use my scooter at first and then my wheelchair after that. Made more bathrooms ADA accessible. Now it was a hospital. They should have done that before.
They should have done that. Right, right.
They did. Good. Nonetheless, they did. And I was very appreciative. My boss was very good about making sure that if I needed something, I had it. It got hard to hold the phone. So she gave me one of those earbuds so that I could make calls and answer the phone with those. I mean, there were a lot of accommodations. Yeah. I was watching something by Emma Westerly on YouTube probably, and she identified that she could get her arms to be supported with a device that attached to the chair. My point is that, yes, there's all kinds of possibilities out there. We just need to research them. Many employers will provide ergonomic sessions so that they can bring somebody in, like an occupational therapist, that will help you with your setting. Not all of them will, but if you do the research online, you can find the capabilities to help you stay in your job if it's going to promote, you know, your well-being overall.
Yeah.
With me, you know, I worried about when I should stop for probably 10 years before I did, but I just kept getting, you know, well, this accommodation works. I'm going to continue on. This accommodation works. I'm going to continue on. But it hit me at 2 o'clock in the morning, like all good ideas do, 2 o'clock in the morning, that it was just time. It was just time.
Really?
And it was the right decision for me at that point in time. I was in a wheelchair. Moving around the office, there's, you know, there's no extra people anymore. So I was bringing my son in on the weekends to help me file things, to staple things, to put things together, to organize things, because there wasn't anybody. My office mates were just delightful. They're, you know, I love them to pieces, but they had their 60-hour-a-week job to do on their own. And I didn't want to be pestering them also, although they would have done it had I asked them. And I do encourage people, ask for help. You got to ask for help. I used to say, can I borrow your muscles? And it always got a giggle. And they were very, very happy to help. Very happy to help. But it was right. It was right for me. I just know. I got to the end of the road with the accommodations in my role.
Yeah. Then you realize this is the time. But at least you took it as long as you could in your mind. I did like how you mentioned, you know, you thought, oh, maybe I'll stop. Oh, no, this accommodation works. I'll keep going. It sounds definitely like a one step at a time type process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I would encourage anybody that's thinking about it to really think about the big picture. You know, what else could I have that would help me to do my job better? Or maybe I need to look at a different job. There are so many jobs nowadays that you can do from home, telecommuting that you can do from home. So, you know, don't give up without really researching and looking at the bigger picture. There might be something out there. There might not be. The other thing that I was concerned about is what would I do for an income? I was able to get long-term disability through the company. Which I do have to say was not easy. It was not easy. And there was no one in HR to help. They kept pointing me to the wrong company and then the wrong phone numbers. But I am tenacious. I figured it out. And I did get it within 3 months.
Oh, wow.
But that could have been very, very scary.
Yeah.
That could have been very, very scary. So once again, you need to use your resources. You know, if you know anybody in your HR department, or your boss, your supervisor, use your resources to really help you with that transition. It doesn't have to be hard. It generally is, but it doesn't have to be that hard.
Not to be. How about those, and like, you know, we also touched on knowing like when the transition to go to, you know, pieces of equipment. I think you mentioned wheelchair, power scooter, or some have power wheelchairs, et cetera. You know, if it's becoming difficult to walk or stand, do we have a tendency to wait till it's too late, like when you're falling and there's other issues that happen because of that? Should we be looking a little more ahead of the curve instead of right at it? and go, well, we should probably get this piece of equipment or look into it before it's desperate.
I do think you need to consider the quality of life, your quality of life, and that includes safety and time.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot more time for me to walk down the hall than it would for me to sit in the wheelchair and walk down there. And also, right. I could fall. So, you know, time is of the essence. So when you're thinking about that change, and we all do, that's where the team comes in. You know, who can help you give that advice to you, that can also evaluate you and say, yes, it is time because of X, Y, or Z. Or maybe it's not time, and maybe we need to have you go to physical therapy and strengthen up other muscles in your legs or your hips or your abdomen that might keep you strong so that you can continue to use that walker. Or no, that's not a possibility at this point in time. Physical therapy, occupational therapy, your physiatrist, if you have a good one, your good neurologist, if you're fortunate to have one of those as well, or your family members, which always with me, that always includes your close friends, people that love you, that have good intuition and your best interest at heart.
Right.
It's quality of life, safety, and time management.
Nice. That's great advice. That's great advice. Is there anything that I've missed so far to ask you? Because I know I wanted to hit those main points as well as the women's group. You know, I don't want to say goodbye until we make sure we got all our bases covered.
I think the only thing that we haven't talked about is, you know, this is such a gut-wrenching disease. It robs us of so many positive things.
Yeah.
And having dealt with it now for 40 years, I've learned not to hate it anymore, because it takes a lot of energy to do that. And I need that energy for other things. And the disease has really taught me to look at people differently and to look at their strengths and their positivities. We all have them. And to be much more gracious and humble and kind. You know, we all need kindness. We all need kindness. I know that I am looking to people to be kind when I drop something on the floor, when I'm out and about, I need somebody to help me pick it up, or to open up a door, or to help me, you know, take the lid off of something.
Right.
Those things that I can't do anymore. This disease has taught me to be more patient, to not be as anxious, although I tend to still do that, but to be more gracious and more humble and more kind.
More great advice. Thanks, Renee, for joining us, being a part of this episode. I think a lot of valuable information here. Plus, I love the fact that we have brought out the woman on wellness a little more, right? And kind of put it more in the front seat of something more for people to use, women to use for support. It sounds like a great group, very, very fortunate to have you a part of that. And a part of our community. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I hope to see more women in the group after this.
Absolutely. Yes. Let's fill it up. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much, Tim.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye-bye.
So that is Renee Beaker. She is a force, right, in our community. It's great to have her a part of it. It's a quick word from our sponsor, and we'll be back on the other side of it, talk a little more. This is the FSHD Society Radio Show. Today's FSHD Society Radio Show podcast is brought to you by PerkinElmer Genomics. PerkinElmer Genomics, a global leader in genetic and genomic testing, knows that getting a diagnosis matters. That's why PerkinElmer Genomics offers a comprehensive portfolio of test options to answer the complex medical questions that will inform care decisions and provide patients and their families with the best possible outcomes. Using the newest and most innovative technologies coupled with expert genomic interpretation, PerkinElmer Genomics provides diagnostic solutions for a range of conditions, from broad approaches such as whole exome and whole genome sequencing for rare disorders, to target gene testing for neuromuscular disorders, including FSHD type 1 and type 2, and Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Talk to your healthcare provider about exploring the testing options available through PerkinElmer Genomics and visit us at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. PerkinElmer Genomics, radically rethinking genomics. Welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. We had a great conversation with Renee Beaker as we talked about, you know, a lot of things in life, really. I mean, not just the diagnosis story and her FSHD story, but the transitions through her life, you know? I find it that that it is a transitional thing, what FSHD is, and you have to adapt and you have to change sometimes your mindset. And I think there's a little bit of a blessing that it's a slow disease to some degree, but the changes sometimes for me, at least, I found are actually surprisingly quick too. I didn't have drop foot in my left foot for, you know, a long time, and it didn't feel like it gradually happened. It felt like it was all of a sudden I hurt my foot, and then now it's just gotten worse. So, you know, sometimes I think I'm ignoring what's truly happening, and I think others are in the same boat as I am. So we had to try to be conscious and understand how our body's changing and what we have to do to forecast the best we possibly can to change, if it's within your lifestyle, within making time for PT or OT appointments, so you can strengthen what you have, so you can continue to do what you love to do or what you have to do even. Like, you know, jobs, not everybody loves their job. I get that. I'm not naive to think that. But yet at the same time, you do have to do some type of job in some cases to make ends meet, to help your family, to help yourselves. And in order to do that, I think we have to be conscious of how our body's changing through the disease and what's happening. What comes with that, from my opinion, is you also need to have support with your family, your community. So if you don't have a large family or anybody you live with that can take care of you to some degree, just like, you know, Renee has her son with her, there's outside support. The society is part of that. And there are chapters near you possibly that you can reach out to them. And if not the chapter, there's these other groups that you can be a part of. We named a lot of them with the early onset and the Gen Z, for the younger people. And you have the Caregiver Sharegiver Hour, and you have this Women on Wellness time. And there are resources. And it sounds like possibly a men's group coming as well in the future. You never know. So, you know, be active and be a part of it. Sometimes when you dive into the community of FSHD, yeah, there's a little bit of that. Okay, we're still talking about this disease and this and that. And that can get exhausting. Of course, you want to have other parts of your life that are without it. But let's face it, it's right in our face. We still have to deal with it. You can't ignore it. So I loved Renee's aspects and I loved her viewpoints and her advice. I think it helps a lot. All right, we're going to take one more final break. When we come back, we'll kind of clue in on some other possible happenings coming up in the FSHD Society world. Let's take a break. We'll be back on the other side. The FSHD Radio Podcast is brought to you by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum Therapeutics is a proud sponsor of the FSHD Radio Podcast. The team at Fulcrum is working to develop innovative therapies targeting the root causes of genetic diseases, including FSHD. As the only company with a drug in clinical stage development for FSHD, Fulcrum is proud to support programs that are helping more people learn about FSHD and the critical need for research that can lead to new treatments. For information and updates about Fulcrum, visit their website at fulcrumtx.com. You can also connect with them on LinkedIn or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. And special thank you to our two awesome sponsors of the show, PerkinElmer and Fulcrum. Both have been a big force in our community, helping out with treatments and, well, so many more. The list is endless. Visit them both if you can. Links, I believe, to them are through fshdsociety.org as well as their own websites. Check it out, please, and help support our sponsors as much as they support and help us. And the support, that's why I think the theme of this show we had here was we talked to Renee Beaker in this episode and looking for that support, and that she has optimism, but she told me, you know, not always optimistic. You know, sometimes it's anger. Sometimes it's mad at the disease. I had a coworker, she was actually my manager when I first was diagnosed. She had and has MS. And I revealed to her what my diagnosis was, and I looked for some support, which she gave it to me quickly with a nice closed door conversation in the moment of, Tim, you're going to mourn, you know, mourn the fact of what you thought you're going to be as you get older, mourn the fact that things are going to change, that this is in front of your face. It was the best advice at that moment I could have gotten. And honestly, it's been one of the top advices that I've had since. So for me, you know, it's really about support. Find it early, find it often. That's kind of my takeaway to today's episode with Renee. So other things going on in the community, check it all out, fshdsociety.org. Go to the calendar site. This is going to be airing in October here. So there's a lot of things coming up. The early onset parent roundtable is coming up this month. You have FSHD University. Looks like they're going to be talking about pretty fascinating topic, actually, bowel and urinary issues. I mean, that's kind of important. Needs to be talked about, as uncomfortable as that can be. And then, of course, stay in tune with the show as we go hot off the press on the 27th. We bring that episode to you as well. And then the next Women on Wellness is going to be November 2nd. Wow. Deep into fall here, folks. So thanks for being on or part of the show. We thank you to Renee for being on the show as our featured guest. And we look forward to seeing you guys again on the next episode. Take care. You've been listening and watching the FSHD Society Radio Show.